Welcome to Do You Understand the words that are coming out of our mouths podcast, where we're going to determine the strength of the bond between Black folks and Asian folks through food and cinema. Who wrote this?
It's so much more elevated than,
yeah, this is
than we not, could ever
we're watching think the Rush Hour movies and making some kind of Black and Asian fusion food.
Yeah, which, I mean, spoiler alert, so far they've all been bangers, the food that...
Oh!
Hey.
So, you know. Thank you. And our guest this week is, I would say, one of the maestros of the recap and banter format.
Oh, wow.
Among other things. You're talented in so many other ways. But
he walked so we could run.
He walked so we could walk a little slower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He walked so we could crawl. It's yeah. Jason Concepcion. What's up, man?
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to be here.
This is coming out too far for this to be relevant, and there's a real chance this next sentence will be cut. But Jason is in his Halloween costume, and it's an all-timer.
Yeah. And perfectly on theme for this episode.
Accidentally on theme.
That was a complete accident. I am a Parisian bedbug.
Complete with bowl of wine and enormous baguette.
This baguette looks good as fuck.
It looks pretty good, right? It's from Target.
Damn.
For a split second, so for the dish we made today, Andrew can walk them through that. But
yeah.
There is a moment where I was like, am I just going to pivot to a banh mi?
Yeah.
And I almost
not
did, but
we almost kind of, given the parameters of what we have, we could kind of get away with it. But yeah, let's start with the food as we usually do. This time, there's going to be less mouth sounds eating on mic because we ate beforehand because this was a more
intricate,
labor intensive dish.
Yeah.
We did Southern catfish summer rolls.
Fried catfish.
Southern fried catfish summer rolls. What do we think?
Listen, if it's a bottom feeder, I'm in. If it's a fried bottom feeder, I'm in. That's where all the good stuff goes, is to the bottom.
What's your relationship with catfish?
They're one of my favorite fish that doesn't have teeth.
Real one.
They don't have teeth?
Nah, dude.
Nah.
Yeah, once again, the maestro showed up. More information. You did more research than anyone here in your brain.
I can't remember. That's why people do noodling with catfish.
Oh, because they just suck.
They just suck on that arm.
Suck in cartilage. Yeah. Damn. This is, so I used, we used Zig's recipe.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty standard, just sort of a flour, egg wash, some
cayenne.
Nothing
really except paprika. Nothing exciting about the actual breading of it. It's pretty standard, but the sauce that you put together.
Well, so this is Crystal Louisiana hot sauce, an all-time classic, mixed with the bottle of fish sauce I had in my fridge that, let me just say this too, because there's normal fish sauce, and there's the fish sauce I had in my fridge, because I got the bottle that was like, I think it's a liter.
Oh, wow.
And it's been, you know, I don't maybe use fish sauce in the volume that some other Asian folks do.
Yeah.
So that shit was dense.
Yeah.
Like I think a lot of water content has come off of it.
Do white people eat fish sauce? Like, are there?
Now they do, obviously. Do they? In LA, they do.
Yeah.
But no. But the most ancient European sauce that I know of is basically fish sauce,
garum.
Which is garum. Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
From Latin class.
Yeah.
Wow.
The Sirwisses, if you know what I'm saying, are out in the back making garum, which I then watched a video for, I assume because they were listening to me. It's just like fish heads in a clay pot in the Roman sun.
That kind of sounds like it smacks. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just ferments until it's like turns into like, you know, essentially fish sauce. It's like salt and fish heads. It's not different than fish sauce. So that's why people fish sauce.
The Romans did it again.
Yeah, back at it. Can never count them out. Can't back the Romans into a corner.
But
tu brute, you know it.
We mixed fish sauce, a little honey, some bird's eye chilies, garlic.
Also, Andrew is being very sanctimonious. He's being very giving by saying us. And once again, for week three, Andrew has done all the cooking. I merely provided the recipe.
I wouldn't have had a catfish recipe like you did. That shit was great.
You know, number four, I'm going to do the cooking. Well, actually, not true at all. But so, no, so we've already know who's going to do the cooking.
Well,
but,
so you know, you'll do some. Spirit.
Yeah. Zeke, did you? Would you catch your own catfish, or would you go to the shop?
We would go to the shop because I don't feel like where I live. So I'm from North Carolina, like Stokes County. Not that anyone knows that, but like I don't think that there's
just giving out your parents' address.
Yeah, 2714. No, yeah. I feel like it was the juice was not worth that squeeze because you have to like go to the creek.
Get down in there.
Yeah. Find like a suitable catfish that probably, hopefully, does not have any type of disease, or you can just go to like the market and get some.
Yeah,
gutting a fish is. I've done it before. It's like low on the reward for labor.
Yeah, I feel like I've been with you when we've gotten fish and they did not clean it, and you drove back to the market to have the monger clean it for you.
Take fucking care of this.
Yeah.
I used to love gutting fish that I caught.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like a fillet type fish, because it's just, you just cut the little fins off and then you just like fillet it. But I used to really enjoy it. I guess I'm just a weirdo.
Just built different.
I'm just built like that. But I used to really like it if I was out fishing and camping and would then
eat the fish that I caught. I didn't realize you were such a outdoors dude.
Not really. Yeah. But I used to, when I was living back east, I would go camping every summer. In New England, and fishing for perch and bluegill and stuff like that.
Bluegill is my favorite. I think of the lake fish.
Are you? Yeah. Do either of you have TikTok?
I do.
Dog. Well, you know, there's a genre of TikTok maker which is like vaguely Eastern European man who goes out to like the wildernesses and like cooks food with like one type of knife, but he just like brings out like a meat. Sometimes will catch a fish, but like I envision that type of energy. Like you have your setup going on. Like I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm eating catfish right now.
And you're sneaking in a couple bites of catfish.
Stump cooking is some of my favorite cooking. I love just like the stump is the cutting board.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have like my wildly inefficient like buck knife.
But you are a fantastic camp cook. Like we went camping earlier this year and Andrew showed up with maybe conservatively, 12 pounds of various organ meats. He had a full family size pack of bulgogi. And he made like a camp stew that had like it was like chicken, several different types of like.
Well, I got shamed by the amount of meat I brought.
You brought a family cooler size full of meat,
and
just
I believe
for us.
We just poured all the meat, some of the vegetables, two beers into the Dutch oven.
Yeah,
and just hung that shit over a fire like it was Game of Thrones style, and just like ladled out meat and stews.
Oh man,
it smelled. Yeah, we made meat pies like impromptu
that
meat
shit
pies.
Was good.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was great.
I think that was supposed to be the pie filling. The pie crust was supposed to be for our dessert, and I just loaded it up. Like
what I'm hearing is after the apocalypse,
during
and after, we're gonna want you in the tribe.
Here's my value is like, all right, I can stew that.
You do have a lot of Carl Weathers energy. Like he can turn anything into a stew.
Do that.
Yeah.
Let's
do that for you.
All right. What do we got? Yeah, I can stew that.
No, you're a good improviser when it comes to like cooking.
I rarely follow recipes.
Yeah.
What's the secret of a stew? Let's see. You find some random meat, random organ meat, and now you're thinking stew.
Yeah.
What's the first move?
I guess it is basically the ideally, if you have like as much resources as you can, it's like the what is it, fricassee model?
Okay.
Which is like a sear, aromatics. Ideally, some kind of alcohol if you have it.
Yeah.
And then a broth or water if you have it. Bring it up to a boil and then bring it down to a simmer and let that MFR go as long as you can, really. Mm. Often. Mm. It's you technically can go too long, but you know.
I feel like we started eating at like 5 o'clock and we did not stop until.
Yeah, that was. Listen, I. Here's what happened. I just had all this stress that like there wasn't going to be enough food, and because we were going to a mountaintop, we weren't easily going to be able to get more food.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I did was for a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 person camping trip, easily brought 15 people's worth of food,
and they all found a home. So
yeah, but partially that home was the home you guys are in now because I took home mad amounts of leftovers too.
I feel that. I have that same when I'm traveling, I pack underwear as if I'm going to shit my pants three times a day.
When I tell you, I'll go on three-day trips.
I get it.
Yeah.
Got to over-prepare.
Yeah.
I was in Savannah for 2 days last week, and I brought 5 pair of underwear just in case.
Yeah, you got to know. And you know what it is also? You guys are more video game boys than me, but I am a real, like, video game min-maxer. There's no XP. There's no coin.
Yeah.
There's nothing I'm going to leave behind in that room. you just got to look. You just look at every single object and just touch it.
Andrew enters crouched to be in cell phone and like swipes bottle caps.
No, I mean,
paper clips.
Like I am like the I'm the hoarder of every video game. And I've never once finished a video game without, again, easily twice as many bullets that I need. And it's not fun. It rapidly is not fun, but that's me. So I guess that's my mentality, scarcity mentality.
It's good for camping though and for cooking. So I mean, also, even tonight, we have 3 extra fillets, and they will find a home.
Yeah, they will.
Hang on to the catfish in your soul. Remember that feeling of having catfish. And now we get into the third and as yet currently final.
Yeah.
Although there are many rumors of a Rush Hour 4.
I did see, as of 2012, Jackie Chan said that they're in development for the fourth one, but who knows?
Yeah. And there has been a TV show.
Which had like a full season, right? I thought it was only a couple episodes. It was a full season.
It might have been a half network season or full season, but yeah. So look, if you're loving what you're hearing here, your local Earwolf executive and demand
Chris Tucker sign back up for Rush Hour 4. He is going to be in Rush Hour 4.
I mean, I can't imagine what else it would be.
Yeah.
All right. So as anyone listening this far has to be aware, our process is we're just going to go down with my sketchy ass notes on Rush Hour 3. This is the one I will admit. I feel like for episodes 1 and 2 of our show, I had more closely kept notes. One of my notes near the end is zoned out for a minute, but they wind up on some flags.
This one's my least, I would say, fun one to watch because they really leaned in on all the qualities I didn't enjoy about Detective Carter.
Yeah.
As far as being a sex pest and diabolically down bad, it really became I think this is somehow almost as racist as all the actual racism in the actual movie.
Oh my God. Yeah. This is, I mean, spoiler alert. This is, I think everyone considers this to be the worst one. Jason, had you seen this one before?
I believe I had, but I'd wiped it from the memory banks and reformatted my entire consciousness.
Yeah.
And so I don't think I actually recalled.
It does that do that to you.
was my first time seeing it. I've never seen it before.
I mean, there's, I don't want to jump ahead, but at a certain point in this movie.
You can if you want.
Yeah.
Okay. At a certain point in this movie, Roman Polanski appears on screen in a full role. And I felt like I would have remembered that from the first time.
Yeah.
But I was blown back in my seat when that happened.
I think I have a similar thing in that, I can't imagine a history of Andrew where I haven't seen this movie, but every second of it was I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, I had never seen it, and Jason texted in the group chat, I think it just said Roman Polanski, and I was like, what? So I went in pretty prepped for it, but there's literally a note I have halfway through the movie that says this feels like a sketch parody of all the action movies that I've seen about loud, horny black man and karate guy.
I mean, this was a movie that, I think the story of the Rush Hour franchise writ large is you're really seeing the power of what happens when actors can get fewer and fewer notes.
Yeah.
Because the first one is tight, focused,
structurally, really it's
relatively unracist, all things considered.
Yeah.
And the second one, you start to see they have a lot more flex. And then this one is it just felt like no one was able to give either of them any notes.
Yeah. Can I actually tell you my little first two notes on this? First note, starting out Sean with Michael Jackson, The Boys Are Back, and then immediately afterwards says, Detective Carter is still a sex pest, but with 30 now, maybe the boy should not be back.
Maybe. All right, I'll beat you that. My first note is, the cold open music is the least oriental of the music.
It's very true. Lalo Schifrin decided to go Western this time.
Like, it's so weird.
Also, there's a note I had in the first one, some spectacular white guy casting with Max von Sydow as like,
oh my God.
The casting in this movie is insanity.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is why I lay this entire thing at the footstep of director Brett Ratner.
Yeah.
Series director Brett Ratner. Because auteur. I feel like it is such a auteur flex to be like, you know what? People think I direct these piece of shit fucking movies, the third X-Men movie and the Rush Hour franchise. Yeah. But like, I saw the Seventh Sign or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I saw Das Boot.
Yeah, yeah.
I love Chinatown.
Yeah.
I'm going to cast Max von Sydow and Roman Polanski in these films and show people that I am a cineast.
Yeah. Who is that for? He just wanted to hang out with them / give his sex pest buddy alleged way worse than sex pest.
Yeah.
Alleged. buddy, like a role?
Which again, I think is why there's no plot reason to have this movie take place in Paris.
Yeah.
I really think he was like, well, this is the only way I can get Polanski.
Literally, a man who is not allowed to come back to the United States
because
of his alleged, very well documented alleged rape.
It is so deeply bizarre because, again, we're just jumping ahead now, but like the point when they introduce like the Chinese hitman that is actually French, and you're like, this is such a bizarre plot point that like, why are we like getting our way into France? I don't understand why does he be from France? Like, it was such.
Okay, we can get there really quick. Chris Tucker is doing traffic for some reason, even though he's a detective. The ambassador Zima is back, and now he's an ambassador. I think he was a consulate before.
Yeah. Do you win?
Fat jokes immediately. Chris Tucker's still horny. This is three years after the last movie. There's a thing called the World Criminal Court in downtown Los Angeles. That's
right. It's in L.A.
Also, Jason, were you watching? Were you like, were you expecting Baron Zemo to snipe?
This is what I was going to say. So this is my note that I was going to, that I teased to you off mic. How much of this of Captain America Civil War was directly stolen from this film?
It's so bizarre. It's like the exact same set.
I'm like,
T'Chaka, get down.
Do you think this makes Civil War worse in retrospect?
I'm looking at you, Russo brothers, from the side of my eye and wondering, like, hey, great movie, but did you crib this from Rush Hour 3?
I mean, I guess that's not the biggest cinema crime. I mean, look, I think that it's like, if there's anything that Rush Hour 3 does is there's the lowbrow is highbrow is lowbrow is highbrow.
Yeah. But they also do one of the things I actually do enjoy, kind of on par with the Max von Sydow, is that Hiroyuki Sanada as like the main bad. I'm like, this guy is one of the most phenomenal actors you ever see. Also, he's so committed to this movie. I'm like, I wish they actually gave you more evil shit to do because you're so good at it.
Yeah. He plays Kenji, who they do not explain is Jackie Chan's quote-unquote brother.
His brother.
Yeah. Or
adopted brother or something. Like they
were in the foster system, but also earlier canon does have Jackie Chan. Oh, sorry, Jason, the other thing of this movie is I refuse to learn Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker's characters.
Yeah,
I'm never going to.
It's okay.
They really make a big deal in the first couple movies about how Jackie Chan was really close to his dad.
Yeah. This is like, what country did this childhood occur in?
Because he's speaking fully Japanese to him.
Fully.
So I'm like,
okay. Well, the explanation is because in Brett Ratner's head, there is a country called Oriental Land, which is where all these people live.
Yeah.
I was watching it while I was like, you know, doing other stuff. So I thought maybe I missed the plot point. But I'm like, also at the end where like Jackie Chan's using a katana and Hiroyuki's using like a traditional Chinese sword. I'm like,
it was
I'm like, what is going on? I'm losing my mind.
Sword, the race of the swords bugged me almost more than some of the other races.
I feel like, which is a problem. I was the only one feeling crazy. I'm like, that's a Japanese sword. What is the commentary here? What's going on?
All right.
Also, I mean, we'll get to it.
I don't know. Okay.
We'll get to it.
But yeah, the ambassador gets sniped in the scene from Civil War. There's a chase scene in the streets of downtown LA. Right by the Citibank ATM that I use a lot, or the Chase ATM.
I will say I am still a sucker for a movie shot in Los Angeles.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just like, Figueroa, I love it.
Heat really changed for me once I moved to LA. I think I realized I did not understand Heat at all.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, yeah, they're right down by the fucking Ace Hotel. Like, oh, shit, I've been to that bar. This place rules. Okay, they go to the high school to see the ambassador. Weird Islamophobic joke for no reason. Okay, the kid from the first movie, the daughter shows up.
Okay.
Somehow, even though, as far as I can tell from canon, she has been living in the United States since she was five.
Right.
Yeah.
She has a thicker Chinese accent than when she was a kid.
Yeah.
Somehow.
It's the same actress, too, though, right?
Is it really?
I think I looked it up. I think it's the same actress. I mean, I can Google it. Keep talking. I'm a fool here.
And then my first all caps note, she teaches at a kung fu studio.
Yeah.
Which brings us to, blah, blah, blah.
Can I just say, props to Brett Ratner for saying we need a reason for her to be good at martial arts.
Oh. Yeah.
Like. I mean, I like where your head is at in this case, Brett, even though the execution, I think, is I would quibble with it. But good thought to be like, shouldn't there be a reason?
I'm looking at the credit. She is in the first. She does play her in the first one. But I'm just noticing that the evil, the second villain is just called Dragon Lady.
Yeah. Well, she's not even introduced yet. But in the Zhang Ziyi role, it's some other lady who gets like truly
discount Zhang Ziyi
screwed. Yeah. What was I going to say? Okay. And then so they're given the next clue in their quest, which is they have to go to this kung fu studio to get something out of her locker.
Oh boy.
They have a discussion on the streets of L.A. That begins with talking about whether Chris Tucker is more half black or Chris Tucker is more half Chinese or Jackie Chan is more half black.
Yeah.
That I said is this is the breathtakingly racist moment of this film.
Yeah, I have two. I'll get to the second one, but I think Jackie Chan saying Snoopy Dog is more racist than him saying the M-word three times in the first movie. And I'll take that to the bank.
Go home, Carter. This has nothing to do with you.
I made Su Yong a promise the same as you.
This is the business of China.
Well, for your information, I'm part Chinese now.
That's right, Lee. For the last 3 years, I have studied the ancient teachings of Buddha, earning 2 black belts in wushu martial arts, spending every afternoon at the Hong Kong Garden Massage Parlor on Pico and Bundy. I am half Chinese, baby.
If you half Chinese, I'm half black. I'm your brother, and I'm fly. You down with that, Snoopy? That's dope, isn't it?
Sorry, Lee, you can't be black. There's a height requirement. Same as riding a Matterhorn.
Go home, Carter.
I can't leave you, Lee. Yong, you own your ponyo. Can't leave my brother.
His tone, when he calls Chris Tucker Snoopy Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made me truly jump out of my skin, somersaults before I could return to my body.
It made me feel really, really bad.
Yeah.
The first movie, it mostly succeeds in pulling this neat trick in which Jackie Chan mainly, but also Chris Tucker, are made to do racist things, but they do them completely innocent.
To different degrees.
Yeah. Your mileage may vary, but that's what they try to do.
It's not what happens here.
In this movie, they completely jettison that, and it's just like, hey, wouldn't it be great if this character just said this?
Yeah, and they just kind of have it's like the conversation they both kind of had in their head, but should never have said out loud to each other.
Chris Tucker calls him a full slur in this movie, and there's no comment on it.
Oh my god, I think I missed that part.
He's the C-man is what he calls him, but not that one.
Good for him. I mean, from the outtakes, it is pretty clear that like they let Chris Tucker do whatever.
Yeah, he was airing the block out. Yeah, but the chopa sing as it.
I gotta say, also, since you mentioned them, I'll pick up the thread. And of course, the outtakes are, you know, are a staple of Jackie Chan films in particular. I was like, I found it racist that 80% of the outtakes are just Jackie Chan, who is not a native English speaker, mispronouncing English words.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing. Hey, this Chinese guy can't speak English.
What a fucking dummy,
what a fucking guy, huh?
Hey, why don't you jump on a bus, buddy?
It does. Yeah. I feel like, well, that actually also gets into a little bit the second big note, which is like, somehow this feels like a step back action-wise from 2. I know you didn't haven't watched 2 recently, but 2 is now the by far the high watermark of the series.
Yeah, well, I kept as I was watching it, I kept thinking, oh, maybe like this is the point in his career where he stopped doing as many stunts because he's got to be in his 50s at this point.
Sure.
And he can't take those kind of bumps anymore. But like, I did notice that the stunts weren't hitting as much, or like when he was doing stunts, like, oh, that's not Jackie Chan taking this hit right
now. Yeah. Yeah, it was something, but I think just everything was less ambitious. Like, it was a little, there was way more gunplay in this one.
Yeah.
In a bad way.
I will say I did.
And I love guns.
Yeah, you have so many behind you right now. Yeah. I will say I did enjoy the hospital fight scene where they sort of, both worlds sort of collide, where Jackie Chan uses his Jackie Chan, like, comedy.
Yeah.
To like load the gun, he slides across
the thing.
More of that is what I think what made the first movie work so much.
Oh, that's right. Did we forget the hospital? No, the hospital set piece.
No, I'm sorry, I'm just jumping in.
No, sorry. I was like,
I
forgot. Because this movie doesn't matter. The order that things happen matters so little.
It truly is just a collection of scenes. But I think the first one really excelled in being like, oh, this is like half of a Jackie Chan movie,
right?
Yeah. Half of like what you consider like a studio comedy movie, and they really mesh those worlds together really well. But with this, and it's just like, here are like a bunch of scenes, and like you can tell as the audience is about to fall asleep, like guns, hot lady, karate kick, you know?
It's really, it feels like it was like written by a stopwatch.
Like, they're literally, I mean, I'm sorry that I'm keep jumping ahead, but like, there was a point
where are you sorry to?
All the Ratner heads out there. All the Ratheads. There is literally a moment where they have the dark soul of the night, or like they break up. And that literally the halfway point in the movie, like 45 minutes into it, 45 minutes left. I was like, all right, this is perfect timing.
I checked my time on the recording as well. I was like, what the fuck? Okay. And then so they go to the Kung Fu studio where they have to fight a bunch of children who are learning Kung Fu, and also a guy who initially I was like, this isn't the non Yao Ming NBA guy, but I think
he's an NBA guy.
Yeah.
Son? Okay. Something son?
Yeah, let me remember
who
he is. Hold on a second.
Was it Deng? No. Okay.
Yeah, Sun Ming Ming.
Oh, it was Sun Ming Ming. Okay. That was a guy I was thinking of. All right. So yeah, it's they work in an NBA cameo.
Yeah.
They have a little comedy fight against a very tall man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very good. The stakes are very insane. And then they do another who's on first with Asian Chinese names.
You know,
bit.
If you gotta go back to that well sometimes. It's feeding the whole village.
Who are you?
You.
No, not me, you.
Yes, I am you.
Just answer the damn questions. Who are you?
I have told you.
Are you deaf?
No, you is blind.
I'm not blind, you blind.
That is what I just said.
You just said what?
I did not say what. I said you.
That's what I'm asking you.
And you is answering.
Shut up. You.
Yes?
Not you, him. What's your name?
Me.
Yes, you.
I am me.
He's me. And I'm you.
And I'm about to whoop your old ass, man, because I'm sick of playing games. You, me, everybody's ass around here. Him.
Kaja.
I'm going to kick his ass. I'm sick of it.
I think that is maybe the other thing about this movie is it goes back to the well from previous movies on almost everything, except for the one thing that we actually want, which is, to my knowledge, and admittedly, I have a note even here that says I did zone out. No one asks if they understand the words that are coming out of anyone else's mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck is happening?
And you have more languages that are just plays in this movie.
That's hubris.
Yeah.
That truly is just like,
I did. I mean, I'm not even going to apologize. There is a moment in the interrogation scene where I'm like, this is They're going to say it, right? They're going to say the thing? Never
said it. Okay, yeah. And so it turns out this whole thing is a fucking red herring. The Kung Fu studio had earlier been robbed at gunpoint, and yet later in the day, there's still children just like hanging out.
Well, one monkey don't stop the show. It's got to go on.
Whatever. The hospital set piece. There's like a shootout at the hospital. This is the first time we see one of our two leads acting as a decoy.
Yeah.
But Jackie Chan pretends to be the ambassador, beats up a bunch of generic triad goons. Mm-hmm. And they end up interrogating a French-speaking Chinese guy. A Chinese guy who only speaks French. It is insane that he's not a Vietnamese person.
Yeah, like, why? What a weird thing
so
to do.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And then they have a comedy set piece interrogation scene with a French-speaking nun who works at the hospital. Mm-hmm. The bit is that they don't want to swear in front of the nun.
Yeah. Right. That's, I mean, has anyone here ever done like round tables, like round table punch ups?
No. Yes.
So if you've done, I'm please book me for more. I love them so much. But like, there is a moment where you're like, oh, you just have to throw out the most baseline, low level scenario for like middle America to get. And you're like, oh, what's funnier than like two guys trying not to curse while they're holding a gun to this man's head. And the scene goes on for 800 years.
It goes on for a long time. One thing I was like, why is there nobody in this fucking hospital? There's a whole gun battle is taking place.
So bizarre.
There's
right.
nobody else on this entire floor. And now Chris Tucker is like threatening to blow a guy's fucking brains out in front of a nun. And there's no one has arrived. This is going on for 10 minutes.
It feels like what it is they were like, if Brett, listen. If you can shoot the first half of this movie for under this budget,
you
can go to as much Paris as you want.
Yeah. Go to Paris.
Because it's just like killing time in the cheapest scene shot in the cheapest possible way.
It is a live action equivalent of Sideshow Bob stepping on the rigs for 30 seconds.
It's so long, but without all the heart. It's just so boring and like so one note. It's bizarre.
But we get that fantastic button of when she daps up.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
And says, good working with you, brother.
I forgot about that because my brain was leaking out of my ears. For some reason, even though they've just met a French triad, the first place they take our vulnerable hostage is to their French ambassador's place, Max von Sydow's.
I zoned out. He's from France. Is that what's his deal?
Right?
I mean, that explains, but he has like a British accent.
And
right?
He's from France. I think that's why they're there. Or he's the head of the criminal court.
Yeah, the world criminal court.
Anyway, I guess what I'm saying is even more. Look, in every movie, the bit is this clearly evil white guy is evil.
Yeah.
But this one was. It just like shocking how like little they gave a shit about making anything make sense.
Yeah.
So then in classic going back to this other well, there's an inexplicable country change.
Yeah.
And we jet off to Paris.
We spend a million years in the plane. I mean,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Again, Brett, if you could get this first half of the movie in for under five, you could spend the other 90 in Paris.
Absolutely. Shoot out under the Eiffel Tower. Yes, you can do it. Just get it in under $2 million.
Yeah. It's just like the. The first half of this movie is a series of SNL sketches.
Yeah.
And the second half of this movie is like
bad James Bond.
Yeah. Truly. It's like there's like the. I have written they go to Paris and are very horny. This is the only backstory that is not necessary, but is referenced, which is in two. Jackie Chan is going off to New York with the femme fatale. Right. I can't remember what her name is. Doesn't matter.
R.I.P.
Yeah. And
I forgot that.
The whole thing. Yeah, that's the only reason that's there. And then I zone out once again. And the next thing I remember is they're getting beat up by French cops.
Yes, and the titular cop, Roman Polanski.
Yeah, Roman Polanski is
playing
there.
The French villain in the movie. Well, he's a villain in exile from the United States.
I can't overestimate the power of this cameo. Like the way it hit me, I was sitting there like, is that fucking Roman Polanski?
It's like imagine you're watching like Meet the Fockers right now. Meet the Fockers 6, and Weinstein just shows up in the middle of nowhere playing a bad guy. You're like, what is happening right now?
I feel like you're pitching shit that don't joke because it's gonna happen.
Well, it's just so you're like. It's just not even like, oh, he's in the background. It's like, this is...
No, he's a guy. He's a guy in the yeah. movie with lines. Yeah. Everything. He plays like, a major role.
You could Google him and be like, oh, Roman Polanski. And the third thing that pops up is controversy.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
It's so easy to see why he's a villain.
I mean, I was also just like, Rush Hour 3, R. And the first suggestion was like, why is Roman Polanski in Rush Hour 3? Okay. Get rest of what happens. And then there's a cabbie bit.
Right. I cannot believe this man had an arc.
Amazing that this is, again, I feel like Marvel ripped off a significant amount of the structure of Rush Hour 3 mm-hmm. to make its movies, because that's kind of like a Marvel movie is be like, oh, you're minor character. And let's give him an arc.
Yeah.
Full ass arc.
Yeah.
Yeah. George. Like you meet his wife.
Yeah, George let's go to his cabbie. House.
We go. He goes on. He meets them. He goes on
they have an argument. And you're like, I'm sitting in a fight with this 30th on the call sheet and his wife. Yeah, well,
but also like when we meet the cabbie, they have a way too long initial interaction, but because the movie has been padded with the way too long nun thing, the way too long airplane thing, I was just lulled into like, oh, this is yet another scene that shouldn't exist at the length that it's at.
Can I also just say, like, we need to go back in time a little bit. This movie came out in 2007. Yeah. Iraq war, big deal, right? Yeah. France notably broke with us. Freedom fries, the whole thing over here, the reaction to it. And then you get this cabbie character who hates America. But because of his interaction with these flagrantly rogue cops.
Yeah. He pulls a gun on him in the actual.
Yeah. They threaten a cabbie with murder.
Right. He's all of a sudden like, actually, you know what? Why am I so fucking angry?
Yeah.
Why am I so French and angry? Like, this fantasy that these American and a Chinese cop have foisted on me, it's better than my life.
Also, this is only purely for people in this room, but watching you make that great point dressed up as a French cop is just fantastic.
Okay, wait, cabbie, they go to the casino slash sex club, which is introduced, but it is seemingly more of a casino.
Right.
The only note I have about this, it says, I love a high class casino full of just femme fatales for that specific race. Like there's
femme fatale
and Asian femme fatale.
This is like the most like clearly segregated, like romantic interest, movie. It's not bizarre. I was going to say it's bizarre. It's perfectly exactly how they did things in the early 2000s and before. Let's see. Okay. So, we're introduced to Dragon Lady.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of
the real name in the movie, by the way.
They're kind of on the lookout for, by the way, the whole thing is like a bizarre red herring. Nothing really matters. They're chasing, what they think is the name initially of a person.
Do you
who
was
the head
again?
Of the triads? Yes, it's fake Chinese.
Shade something.
I was about to ask what it was. As it like just gibberish.
Yeah, it's just Shai Shen.
Yeah.
Let me see if I get this straight.
Yeah.
Is a legendary figure.
What they say is it's like the legendary head of the triads. But then the first piece of information they get is actually it's a list. Which is a list of the like leaders of the parts of the triad.
Right, right.
But then they're like, but that list is actually also a person
on someone's head.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a real like up and back kind of like, OK, so it's still a person. Great. That's what we thought. Yeah, so Chris Tucker meets the
Genevieve.
Genevieve.
The sort of femme fatale, but really the damsel in distress more, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then there is a moment where it seems like there will be a Asian femme fatale for Jackie Chan to fixate on, but they immediately get into a fight.
Yeah.
One of the more lackluster fights. She has a bunch of knives that she's throwing at him.
Yeah.
I did kind of like the bit where Chris thinks that Jackie is getting laid and really Jackie's getting his ass beat.
Yeah. See, I postulated in our last episode that Jackie Chan perhaps had a contractual thing where he wouldn't hit a woman.
Right.
Because they go to tortured legs in Rush Hour 2 for him not to fight Zhang Ziyi. Like, it's absurd, frankly. Wow. And even when Chris Tucker fights her, it's just like slapstick accidental, basically, the way he wins. But this one, he's like fighting-ish.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, they do a couple of like good Jackie Chan chair bits.
Yeah. It's, yeah, but to me, I thought it was like the fight scene lackluster when it needed some juice.
Yeah, but again, I'm like, I was chalking up like this man's 50 and he's like tired.
Yeah,
or he's not. He's not gonna turn it up for Rush Hour 3.
Maybe he was on the injured reserve. You know, just kind of like nursing something.
True. Yeah, yeah.
He's an old guy.
Gotta consider all possibilities. I will say in the shut up, Matt. In the outtakes, there's a part where she throws a knife and it sticks into the wall. That's a real ass knife ish that she's throwing at.
Yeah, I don't think Ratner's running a tight set.
I guess not. Jackie Chan stabbed on the set of Rush Hour 3? That's the headline. Mm. I guess it's the 2000s.
It's not the worst thing that's happened to him on a set.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I went to his Wikipedia page. That's confirmed. Can I skip ahead to my two favorite, which just means like the most egregiously racist parts in the movie for me personally.
No, please.
Yeah. So there's a moment after this where Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker break up, essentially.
Yeah.
And we have this...
Like the other movies, there's an extremely contrived argument that makes no real sense.
You're not my brother, I think is what he tells
me. Yeah, they have a brief beat apart.
Yeah. And we have a breakup montage that, like, on paper, it's like, oh, this could be kind of funny. I could see how it works. But, like, it is truly one of the most... unabashedly racist things where, like, Jackie Chan's ordering fried chicken.
Yeah. So
Chris Tucker is ordering, like, mushu.
It's so weird.
It's like really he was really one beat away from Jackie Chan getting, like, watermelon. Like, grape. So it was crazy. And then directly after the scene, they go to, like, what is that cutting, like, the big fight in the third act? But, like, Chris Tucker sneaks into, like, a Moulin Rouge, like
Rouge. That's a burlesque kind of deal.
And like, you know, he's a sex pest, but he has this bit where he's like,
"Oh my god!"
Where he's running down the lines like, "I can talk to the Free Island, the blondes, and I want the brunettes." And then he stops by like Indian Pakistani lady, and then he calls her a hybrid. And and it is one of the I rewound to make sure I didn't hear. He called her a hybrid, and like, I lost my mind. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in a movie.
It's nuts.
Well, so Jason, in Rush Hour 2, there is a also way too long scene where he's trying to pick who at the massage parlor is giving, and he's like picking women. And this is just like that, plus it's so much longer and so much more fucked up. It's again, breathtakingly misogynist, I think.
Yeah.
And you can't have a Rush Hour movie without Chris Tucker being on stage and everyone having to like roll with it around.
Yeah, yeah.
They do a little burlesque thing. Mm-hmm. There is an attempt at a open assassination of a performer during the performance.
Yeah.
Which is pretty wild. The triads go. They escape into the sewers of Paris, which is very, very bizarre.
There's that great line. What is the line like? Some say that civilization was born down here in the sewers.
Okay, take it easy, man.
It's so bizarre.
Like a Rick and Morty bit. We're like, don't sit next to that guy, please. He was in a fucking X-Men comic for one second.
Oh my god, this is so long. I'm sorry, we gotta hurry this up.
Can I ask a question for context? I have a note that says I really don't like horny Jackie Chan. What was he?
I don't like it either.
What was he horny about again in this? There's a bit where he was being horny that really put me off.
I think he was still horny for Genevieve, right? Yeah. Isn't that's the whole thing? Okay. It's just like so deeply unpleasant that the bit that they're trying to run with is that he's like horny but has no game, I guess. Okay, yeah. Kinda. It's really like,
oh yeah, and then we have like that followed by it just says gay panic.
Yeah, there's a little, okay, so then, and then there's a very weird sex scene that is awful. There's some shenanigans, an incredibly homophobic moment where she takes off her wig to reveal that Genevieve is, what's it fucking called? Shai Shen?
Right.
Also, it's crazy to me that, like, you tell me a black man from LA has never seen a black woman take a wig off. I know, right? Come on,
it's really, it's so bizarre and like, yeah, it's a weird, weird and long moment.
It's a very, very long. I mean, I did the same thing where I kind of zoned out in the middle of it and came back and it's like she's still on screen with like Wald and I'm like, wait, why are we still talking about this?
It's so, yeah, the whole thing is like, the scenes that go on too long are so, and the movie's not that long.
It's like almost an even 90 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I think if you like pace this normally, that movie's like 65 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it's just not enough there. Okay. Go to the French consulate, get betrayed by fucking obviously Max von Sydow. Kenji has the ambassador's daughter. And this is where they're like, all right, rat. Let the money train rip.
Yeah.
So they have multiple scenes at the fucking Eiffel fucking Tower. Yeah. which there's a little set deck because does the real Eiffel Tower have death gears?
What are they cranking?
I also was wondering when they go close for some of the fight scenes, it seems very clearly like
it can't
the background
be.
Was like CG'd.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
The whole thing, I was just like, this is like, it turned into like a fucking like Metal Gear level.
And once like, again, this is Paris, a city of several million people. They're at the most famous location in that city. There's so no one fucking there. There is no one there.
Yeah, it's like it's late, but get the fuck out of here.
The triads.
Yeah. Beep, beep. Yeah, it's like, oh no. I'm sorry. The triads booked out. They bought out the room. They bought out the room. Gotta let them have it.
Shishen event? Sorry.
Gotta let them have it. Yeah.
Also, how do you think that one triad felt? They had to like rig up the like hanging mechanism? Like,
yeah, they draw straws. Hang the ambassador's daughter near some death gears. I didn't want
to go out there. This was too dangerous.
there's a whole bit where basically Jackie Chan needs to bring Shai Shen, aka Jean Vive, and he needs to show up alone. But of course, it is Chris Tucker in disguise, which brings us to the other staple of the Rush Hour franchise, which is Chris Tucker wearing the longest suit that a human
dressed like a damn peer.
He's dressed nominally like in like Jean Vive's like burlesque, but not burlesque, but her like Parisian couture fashion raincoat.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be very feminine. And it is, I suppose, and it does, you know, but that is undercut by the fact that we've watched two previous movies where this man is wearing a double-breasted 17-button suit.
So like, dressed like a 90s NBA player.
So like,
yeah, it looks like he's wearing Shaq's like suit.
Yeah. It looks like he's like, he got drafted out of like Duke and he's like going to shake, the commissioner's hand.
That's fucking funny. I zoned out at this scene. So like when he came in with the wig, I was like, I completely
it's very hard to care about what's happening. Yeah. But I was just like, because I think they play it as like, damn, it's crazy he's dressed like this.
Yeah.
And anyone who's watched all three movies in a row, the only thing I was like, damn, I actually forgot the rest of this movie, he's wearing kind of a normal suit. Yeah. This really brought it home. This looks more like Rush Hour. It finally becomes a Rush Hour movie where he's wearing like a suit, like a woman's raincoat that fits him like a suit jacket from the 90s.
I will say that I mean, Hiroyuki is so criminally underutilized in this movie. Like, I think he has like maybe four or five scenes, but like, when you're like, you think, oh, he's about to let him cook. He's got a sword. He's going to fight. But like, even then, they didn't really like let him do his thing, which I, again, I'm sure I chalk up to both the Jackie Chan.
So they do have a sword fight. The aforementioned Japanese versus Chinese sword, incorrect sword play. It's like one of those. It's like, so Kenji has the straight sword from you know, like a your Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragons, or your other like wuxia kind of like swords, Chinese sword. And then Jackie Chan's got a goddamn katana.
He studied the blade. I've never actually, I think this might be the first time I've seen Jackie Chan use like a bladed weapon. I'm sure he has them before, but like this one that I actually clocked it. I can have my note that's like, oh,
yeah.
I've seen Jackie Chan use a sword before.
I think you'd have to go back. I don't even know that he did, but I think you'd probably have to go back to his like pre-action movie, like his actual kung fu movie.
Before he was a funny guy.
Yeah.
Or maybe Drunken Master. There's got to be a sword in there, right?
It's like a big spear at one point, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta use that big spear.
can I say one of my favorite moments in this movie, which kind of reminded me of the hospital scene, is like when Shiroyuki dies and he falls for like 30 minutes and crashes into like the ground below. Like, there's such a little reaction to this grown man pancaking himself
on the Eiffel Tower.
There's no one around.
Yeah.
There's literally no one around.
It's like he flattens, like, presumably, like a news agent or something. Like, there's something out there. Yeah. So, yeah, outside of a deserted Eiffel Tower, they do the other classic of Rush Hour, which is like, well, although this is like, there's some flags that turn into a fucking like.
Yeah, you gotta have the section where they slide down a thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of sliding. This all felt very like both confusingly shot and inconsequential. And then for no reason, the cabbie simply saves the day.
Crazy.
This is why we needed that moment in his apartment with his girlfriend or wife.
Yeah.
I don't know the situation. Because you needed to be like, when he comes in to save the day, you're like, I get what his I know why I understand.
Right.
He's like, so touched.
He's like slightly emasculated at some point, but then they like kind of bring him back.
When they held a gun to my head in the back of my taxi
and said that I'm in a spy movie, a clear reference to the Bourne films. I bought it. I bought in. I'm in.
I had the car on this side with the motorcycle stuck in.
I mean, the cabbie has, I think, has a more complex arc than anyone who's ever in any character in any Rush Hour movie.
Yeah. I would be shocked if Hiroyuki, the main villain, had two more scenes than him. I would be shocked because they have such an equal amount of screen time in this movie.
It's so bizarre. He saves the day for no. Look,
where did he get the gun from? Do you?
They props,
give it to him?
Props for using at the very end of the movie the classic, I heard the gunshot. Oh my God, did the heroes get shot? No, they didn't. Look, the villain is tottering. Somebody shot the villain?
Yeah. What if like Earth 1712 were like that version that exists where they just fucking shoot them both in the
execution style?
And then he's like, they ain't gonna be in Rush Hour 4.
Listen, we gotta remake Rush Hour 3. I think this is our calling. And then they punch Roman Polanski.
Yeah, and they do the needle drop for war, and they dance off into just the blackness of France.
It's Paris, so France. Bizarre that they pay for war again, but they won't say, "Do you understand the words that are coming out of our mouths?" Yeah. My mouth, and that's Rush Hour 3. Okay, we've gone on a little longer than we intended to, so let's dive into the questions. Let's see. Out of Parisian gunshots, out of five Parisian gunshots, how would you rate the action in Rush Hour 3?
Oh,
It's a pretty weak showing.
It's a step down.
Yeah, I'm going to say two. It's I mean, 1.5 to 2. I mean, it's just
out of five. This is out of five.
Yeah, out of five. Yeah. Parisian gunshots in the night.
Yeah.
I mean, I sadly agree. It's like a 1.5 guns.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I'm going to go, one single shot in the night.
And well, because they have some moments of brilliance. They have some moments of brilliance, like the hospital fight scene, like that's great. Like some of when they let Jackie Chan do his thing a little bit. Yeah. I guess we're rating for what else we got in the movie. But
yeah. Okay, and then out of how many homophobic wigs do we rate the comedy of Rush Hour 3?
I think 0.5 is doing.
Yeah, I don't even know if we get a star.
This is low.
Yeah, it's one of the most aggressively unfunny, but also it's just like so lazy in its execution for like what comedy is.
I laughed once.
I had one kind of. The clearly ad-libbed head reminds me of Barry Bonds joke at the Kung Fu school. Yeah,
I had one for the reveal of Sun Ming Ming when he opens up the door to see a torso.
Oh, like, that's true. That was a funny shot.
Yeah.
Very, very weird.
Yeah.
Okay. And then normally we rate the cringe, but we just kind of loosely. How far did this improve or set things back with the Black and Asian community?
Ooh. I think it was mutually assured destruction. No one came out of this movie looking good. Like Chris Tucker checks off so many like just bigotry boxes that I wasn't expecting. Like,
yeah,
like,
he goes places. He expands his power.
Yeah, like he really does.
The hybrids line took me out. So like that truly is like I got 5 out of 5.
Yeah, he swerved for that one.
That was
some very ugly shit. I will say, just because I think the movie was like word of mouth got out that it was so bad. It did, I think, the least damage just by virtue of eyeballs.
Yeah.
So in that regard. Good on you, Rat. I don't know. What do you think, Jason?
Gosh, what was the question?
How far did this set us back?
Oh, I think it's, I agree. It's, you know, weirdly, it feels, I'm basing this again off of my own complete mind wipe.
Yeah.
Of the memory of this movie, which I do believe I have seen.
Yeah.
I think it's negligible.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it had very, very little impact. Again, like, I feel like if it did have an impact, the fact that Roman Polanski is in this movie would be something that people would just stop you on the street and go, hey, remember when Roman Polanski was in Rush Hour 3?
That shit was crazy. Yeah.
Wasn't that nuts playing a cop?
Yeah. It's like we got neuralized by this movie. Presumably we might again. Yeah. I guess like check in when this podcast episode comes out, we're all just gonna be like, what the fuck? I've never seen Rush Hour 3. Okay, and then what do we think Southern Fried Catfish summer rolls? We bring it is this improving things?
I mean, for myself, unequivocally, this has done more for the Black Asian community than Rush Hour could ever hope to do.
This might be appropriation of I think there's a high chance something like this exists already in Louisiana.
I can guarantee you. Sure. Yeah, I'm guarantee you.
Yeah, this is less than last episode. This is less original.
This is the equivalent of the Bloods and the Crips holding up the flags together.
Oh, man. All right. Well, off that, I don't know. Jason, thank you so much for coming and hanging out. Thank you so much for doing the fucking homework it took to show up here.
It was a delight. It was a true delight. Thank you for having me.
You got a new podcast out. What else? Where can people find you?
Six Trophies, wherever you get your podcast. You get some special benefits if you are a member of the Wondery app, I believe. This is what I'm told. And it's a NBA podcast for people who like to have fun, co-hosted by myself and a four-time New York Times best-selling author, Shea Serrano.
We don't do plugs, right?
We were told we should act more respectful of the plug system.
Oh, were we? A note from on high. Okay. Yes, Chief. We should call the person from on high the Chief.
Yeah. Chief
says, busting our asses down, down to traffic cops.
Podcasting?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm Andrew T. I do the podcast. Yo, is this racist? I don't know.
Cody Ziegler. Yeah, I don't be out here. You know what? Rick and Morty season 7, if you're watching it. Miles Morales, Spider-Man, read those. They're all fun. And play the game. I had nothing to do with it, but like the city needs saving.
Yeah.
And I can't do it by myself.
This is free promo for the Sony Corporation.
Yeah.
That's it. This has been Do you understand
the words that are coming out of our mouths? Yes.
Do You Understand the Words Coming Out of Our Mouths is produced by Andrew T.
Cody Ziegler.
And Earwolf. Our producer
is Matt Apodaca.
He's right here.
And our engineer is Alex Gonzalez.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you made it all the way to the end, you're a beautiful person. If you're not hearing this voice, go to hell. Earwolf Presents is produced by Earwolf, Amelia Chapelot, and Cody Fisher. And of course, podcast daddy Colin Anderson himself. The Earwolf Presents series is hosted by the one and only myself, Jacques Neal. And our theme music was engineered and sung by the amazing Jordan Duffy. Special thanks and shout outs to Jeff Gross and Aaron Nestor. And for more information on Earwolf Presents, visit earwolf.com and follow us at Earwolf on all social platforms.